This is The Hollywood Outsider, our weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We've got a new episode every week. This is episode 241, and we are discussing our From the Outside In topic, which is, what are the most unnecessary sequels ever made? We're going to have the latest movie and TV news, as well as our own trivia segments. We're going to talk about some upcoming releases, including Hands of Stone, Mechanic Resurrection, which is why we have this topic, and Don't Breathe. And we're going to have spoiler-free reviews of Don't Breathe, War Dogs, The Bronze, and Hell or High Water. Be sure to get the Hole in the Go with our Apple or Android apps. You can also find us on iTunes, where reviews are appreciated. Your podcast app of choice, Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, or Stitcher. Please share the show on your social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, whatever. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow hosts, Justin McCumber.
What's up, Aaron?
Not much, sir. And we have a new voice because Scott Clark couldn't be here this week, Mr. John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. Thanks for having me.
You are welcome. You know, I meant to talk to Justin about this before, but we haven't had a guest host since probably the first year, like for the full episode, since probably the first year, maybe? Justin, do you
Seems
remember?
Seems like it's been a while since we...
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, there it is.
Had a guest host. That was terrible.
No, if you could just keep going until the end of the show, just as a backdrop.
Really? You want me to?
I do.
You want to throw that down?
I thought I'm playing my theme music for this, but okay.
You have theme music? What does it
sound better
like?
Be Kanye.
Power. Yeah, it's either Kanye or Beastie Boys. That's all we ever hear anymore. So go with one of those. Sabotage. John.
You're still not going to make me watch that Star Wars trailer.
Justin loves that trailer. Like,
I just think somehow Sabotage works.
It can work all at once. I'm not watching that trailer.
Aww.
I admire your ability to not watch it. I wish I could be, you know, like you and Steve Peterson don't watch these, and somehow I can't do it. I have to watch them. Whether I want to or not, I am compelled and have to watch every single trailer.
Well, I don't have the strength of Steve Peterson, but because I'll watch at least one or maybe two trailers, I'll watch enough trailers for me to be sold on something, which it's Star Wars. It doesn't have to sell me.
Some might say he's excessive.
When he goes into a movie theater, you know, and you have to, they show the trailers.
Headphones.
Does he just close his eyes and put his hands over his head like earmuffs and nah, ruining the experience for everyone else?
Yeah, he's got to ask the person sitting next to him to let him know when the trailer is done, because he's usually listening to, I believe last time it was Pantera, and he had a hat over his eyes.
Okay.
Oh, hell yeah. All right, Pantera, I can respect.
Does he do the devil's horns? Does he do that and stick his tongue out and rock it?
No, he gets suddenly really relaxed, which is strange.
Explains a lot, really, when you think about it. Now, you're here, and what we haven't done, because we haven't had a guest host in so long, is what we used to do way back in the day, before Brian bailed, and we had guest hosts, was we would ask what your top five movies are, kind of get a feel for what your tastes are. So when you're talking about movies later, we know if we should listen to you or just completely ignore you. So what are your top five movies overall over time?
Over time, top five movies. Mm-hmm. Star Wars is in the running for top five.
Okay.
You know what? I didn't know. I saw it on the plan, but I didn't think to actually make the list.
Come on, can't come up with five.
Wow, you're really taking Scott's reign right here, huh? You're just picking up the slack.
All right. So Star Wars, Signs. I really love Signs.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Not looking good, bro.
Forrest Gump.
Okay, coming back.
I'm bringing it back around again.
Uh-huh.
Fallen and Saving Private Ryan.
Hey, that's a unique list. I'll give you that.
Fallen, the Denzel Washington movie.
Yes, the Denzel Washington movie.
Okay.
No, Falling Down with Michael Douglas. It's the top five. Top five. It's the flat top. Does it? Okay. Well, welcome, John. Thanks for coming on and filling in for the bailing Scott Clark, who's off doing other stuff. I do want to mention we had our drive-in night where we had several people that showed up that we weren't able to connect with for whatever reason. Sorry about that. I promise if we ever do it again, we'll have a better system in place. It was a great to meet a lot of people. Well, Ty and Heather, thanks for coming over and sitting with us. That was great. And sorry to everybody that the weather was up and down. And according to the 10-plus emails I got Saturday night, people didn't want to come because the movie sucked. I couldn't predict that, but it was War Dogs and Suicide Squad. I think they'd already probably seen Suicide Squad, and War Dogs wasn't exactly getting the crowd riled up.
Was it just an hour and a half of watching Jonah Hill eat?
Yes. He was eating Miles Teller throughout the film. He's just getting larger and larger and larger. I'm convinced that's what happened to Channing Tatum. We haven't seen him since the last 22 Jump Street much. I'm thinking Jonah Hill ate him. It's possible.
You know, that movie suddenly sounds better just thinking about Jonah Hill eating Miles Teller, but that would be a bland meal, wouldn't it?
You get points for me for that. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into some other stuff. Hugh Jackman has officially hung up his claws as Wolverine. He just finished Wolverine 3. He says that is his final time as Wolverine. Is anybody else sad or...
All it would take is one call from Kevin Feige saying, bro, we need you over here in our Marvel films. He would be back in that gym working his ass off.
You think so?
Yes.
What about you, John? You think Wolverine would come back for like an Avengers Infinity War-ish kind of film?
It'd be really hard to... I mean, I think that that phone call would make it really hard for him to say no. But I also think that it's time for him to take a back seat. Let them go with a different storyline, a different Wolverine, like the new X-23 Wolverine.
Oh, I don't know anything about that. Is that different? Is it a girl now?
It's a female.
Yeah, it's a female. It's one of his clones, I believe.
Interesting. Yeah. Do you think that's probably what they would do, just so they could go a different direction?
I think they would. It would make an interesting story, I think, and it'd bring a different spin to the whole story of Wolverine too.
And she only got two claws per hand because she a girl. She ain't strong enough to hold three.
Does she really only have two?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I think she's got two and then one coming out of each foot.
What?
Oh, maybe. I don't. Yeah, that might be. It wouldn't shock me.
She's got a hoof? I don't understand. All right. Well, whatever. Well, people have wanted a Big Lebowski sequel for years, and it turns out that they're actually filming a spinoff right now with Jesus. Justin, everybody knows how much you love Jesus. Are you ready for another dose, man?
Well, nobody fucks with the Jesus. This is a great idea. You know, originally it was called 100 Minutes with Jesus, but now they're calling it Going Places. It involves Bobby Cannavale, Audrey Tautou, and Susan Sarandon. It's going to be a crime film, comedy. It's supposed to be really great. Here's the weird part. It's currently filming in New York, apparently without any direct involvement from the Coen brothers, and possibly without even having the intellectual property rights to do this movie.
How does that happen?
So I don't know what's going on. But they're doing a movie based on a character that they don't have the rights for, if this article is to be believed.
I am flabbergasted.
You can't put this movie out. You could film it if you want, but you could never sell it. You could never make a dime off of it because you don't have the contract rights for it. But, you know, then again, maybe they do. And for whatever reason, they just haven't shown it, or the Coen brothers haven't talked about it. I don't know. But if it's not involving the Coen brothers, I got very little interest in it.
I'm more of if it's involving the Big Lebowski, I don't have much of an interest in it.
Oh,
I'm one of those.
Come on, man. It brings the room together.
Oh, man.
Only if you're smoking weed in that room. That's the only way.
Well, duh.
Yeah. I'm with you, John. I like the movie, but I don't get the... Everybody, let's get together and watch The Big Lebowski. I don't get that. It's just not.
I've got friends who watch it a lot, and I don't get it.
Maybe we're doing it wrong.
Shut the fuck up, Donnie. You're out of your element.
God. All right. Well, let's see if we get some Jesus coming soon. We'll see if they ever release it. It might never come. Remake news. My God. Literally everything got remade this past week. We've got The Lost Boys are going to the CW. Well, it makes sense, I guess. Anne of Green Gables is going to Netflix. Ben Affleck's going to helm a new version of Agatha Christie's Witness for the Prosecution. The Departed was just announced as a TV series for Amazon, as well as Jack Ryan, which we've talked about, and Clue, one of my favorite movies of all time, is getting a remake on a global scale. There are probably more. I just ran out of room to write them all down. So of all of those, I guess, what of these might entice you or scare you the most?
I like the Ben Affleck doing the witness for the prosecution movie. I mean, that really entices me the most out of everything that's in the list.
Why is that?
It's a great story, and I'm a sucker for anything crime related. So courtroom dramas really get me, and that's like the most interesting of the bunch. The Lost Boys scares me, and it scares me because if I had a story in my mind as to how they could do this, and if they do that kind of story with what I read on it, I might actually like it, and I don't have that kind of time to devote to more TV.
What's the story in your mind? I'm curious.
Well, when I was reading the article about it, they were talking about how they want to make the story. It's a seven season arc. They want to each season is a different year in the vampire's life. But if they tweak it just a little bit and also make it, if you remember from the movie, at the end of the movie, when Grandpa shows up and he saves the day, he talks about how one of the reasons why he hated living there was all the damn vampires. Well, if the story starts with Grandpa as a kid and growing up with the vampires and as a hunter of the vampires, that could make it be a very interesting story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually a really good idea. You know, I've known the CW has been wanting to try and put together a vampire show, a new one, for a little while now, because they had an actual pilot that they did, kind of a backdoor pilot with Supernatural, where they were setting up these vampires as almost like crime families. Mm-hmm. And they were going to work against each other. I could see them doing the Lost Boys. And I think, you know, given what they've done with some of their shows, they've definitely got a lot of talent over at the CW between all the DC stuff and especially Supernatural now going into its 12th season. And for me, coming off of one of its best seasons yet. But, yeah, I don't know. We'll just have to see. But I like your idea of it actually focusing on that grandpa character, but maybe started off, you know, with him as maybe like a 10-year-old or 12-year-old. And then maybe each year it's like 5 years later, 10 years later.
Yeah, because he wouldn't age, so you wouldn't even have to okay. You start like a 20-year-old and just goes every 5 years.
Well, he's not a vampire. So every season
he would be the one aging. The vampire.
He would be the only one aging. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it's all these goddamn vampires, John.
I was trying to keep it clean. No,
it's okay. It's okay. You could say God.
I'm here, bro.
Yeah. Justin's here to ruin it all for everyone. I got The Departed, stop it. There's some things where I think, you know what? They've really peaked as far. I mean, I could see it as a series. Absolutely. I think it could work, blah, 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 blah. I love that movie, and I think it's perfect the way it is. And it was perfect in Japan or whatever, too, or China, whichever one it was, as well. So you've got two pretty damn good movies. I don't need anything else. I think I'm good there, but they're going to do it anyway. But Clue, as much as I love that movie, is one thing I think could benefit from a remake, because I don't think you can do the comedy aspect again. I just don't think there's enough talented people that you could get in the room that their egos wouldn't get in the way these days. But I would love to see a mystery that is, you know, from the Clue perspective. Now, a global scale, not sure how that's going to work, because, you know, what secret passage is going to take you from China to the U.S.? I don't know, but it's...
That wrench is going places, though.
It is. I kind of don't get that idea, but hey, they did Battleship and, you know, whatever.
You know, this kind of thing has worked in the past. Maybe they could do an all-female Clue.
All-female comedians?
Yes. Oh, yes. Hey, you're in my brain, bro.
Kristen
Wiig. Get out of my head.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, Kristen Wiig. She could be, you know, was it General Mustard? What was it? Colonel Mustard?
General Mustard? Have you never played Clue?
It's been forever. Give me a break.
Oh, my God. Those things stay in your mind, man. Hey, John, I know your wife, she's a huge Clue fan. I've bonded with her over it. Is she excited about that, or does she doesn't want it to happen?
Well, when I showed her the list of the movies that or TV shows that were coming up, and I said, "What do you think of this?" She actually didn't even see Clue remake, and I tried to make her see it.
Mm-hmm.
But her eyes just somehow just always looked around it. I even tried to blow it up and say, "Hey, look, take a look at this," and she's like, "What are you showing me? I can't even."
You still talking about the format? I don't know what's going on.
Hey.
Oh, sorry. It's kids podcast. Sorry.
You know, and when I was reading the article on it, what all I could think about was, is this Vantage Point the sequel?
Oh, I see what you did there. That took me a minute because nobody saw that.
Right.
I did because Dennis Quaid's in it. Yeah, that actually does make sense. That does make sense.
It's like, well, we wrote this sequel to a movie that didn't do really well. What are we going to do with it? Let's just call it Clue 2 or The New Clue.
If it's not in a mansion, it shouldn't be Clue. I mean, I don't care which way you do. There's a lot of ways you could do that. I love the mystery angle of it. You can make it a serious mystery. You could try to remake the comedy with today's egomaniac comedians, but I don't see it could be done. But to take it out of the mansion is not Clue. That would be a different game. I don't know right. what game that would be.
It's Risk.
Yeah, there you go. It's Risk with a wrench. I just don't get it. I don't get it. All right. Well, I guess we're going to get all that stuff and everything else in the world that you've ever wanted to never be touched will get remade too, apparently.
What if they went more of a Saw kind of route?
Whoa.
Since you say the humor side wouldn't be as doable, maybe go a horror angle with it. And
like Vicious?
Yeah. I mean, instead of it just me being a candlestick, but something, you know, where that candlestick's being slowly pushed up your behind or something. Ooh. I'm just spitballing at this point. That's just the first thing to hop into my head.
That's the first thing, huh?
I start real dark.
This is why you're that's on a terrorist watch list right here.
That's right. Yep. That's why I can't get on a plane.
That's why he drives everywhere. Every time he takes his grandma somewhere, he can't take a flight. Nope.
Next summer, Clue the Nightmare.
I'd watch it. I would. All right, well, that's that for now. Let's move into our From the Outside In topic, which is what are the most unnecessary movie sequels ever? Now, it's important to note that we're not talking about the worst sequels ever. We actually did that in an episode a while back. We're talking about the most unnecessary sequels ever made. Movies where either the original didn't do well financially, or it's been too many years, or the stars didn't return to the sequel, or the story was already complete. Those movies where, by most standards of reasoning, a sequel shouldn't even be a thought. And we're going to limit this to theatrical releases, so because there's way too many on DVD, including the Lion King sequels, which I'm sure Justin saw every one of them. So we're going to limit it to just theater movies. Everybody clear
on the circle of life.
Did you see the gif, where they throw the lion baby cub off the cliff?
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
That's funny. Oh, I would watch that movie so many times. Okay.
Fly, Simba, fly.
When it comes to Hollywood, I've personally never understood this. Movie bombs or the original actors refuse to come back. Why even do a sequel? Doesn't that almost always lead to yet another bomb or a bad movie?
When you talked to me about this last week, I decided to start doing a furious amount of research on it. I was going to say, you know what, it usually always means that, but it really doesn't. And I think the part of the reason, I mean, this is also the birth of the idea of the franchise. You know, let's mm-hmm. everyone wants to turn something into a cash machine, and movies and some of these movies are easily made for that. And I found that the 80s and 90s are the biggest culprits of this problem.
What do you mean?
You get a movie, it does well to moderate, whatever kind of metric they use to say, okay, well, this does okay. And I think a lot of the reasons why movies from the 80s and 90s did as well as they did is just because we had no idea what they were going into it. And it makes the money it makes. And then some guy in Hollywood does a big bump of coke and says, you know, it'd be a really good idea. Let's go and let's take the, to these two movies and make them the same movie again. And we ended up getting sequels that just some of them were great, but not so much in other cases.
Justin, what about you? You think this is something that like you've never understood? I just don't understand it. So.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, I could kind of understand it if the studio says, you know, guys, we miffed on this one. We didn't cast the right person or whatever else they reason it out to be. You know, let's not just bury this one and done. Let's try and improve on it and make it better because, damn it, we believe in this this property. And then they make the film and it either tanks or goes on and does really well. Either way, it doesn't matter. I mean, not to me anyway. To them, it matters quite a bit. But Hollywood, if nothing, it never says quit.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how many crap movies in a row you put out, there's always another one you could make.
I don't understand it. If like a movie Zoolander, that's a prime recent example. The movie was okay. I mean, but it was never like a cultural touchstone or anything. I mean, it did okay when it came out. It did decent money. And then a decade and a half later, whatever it is, they decided to make a sequel to it. Like, who thought, other than Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson, who thought that was a really good idea? Because I didn't know anyone that was, you know what I wish? I really wish Zoolander would come back because I miss Duckface. I don't think that ever happened to anybody that I'm familiar with. So I don't understand it. You've got the exception where like Austin Powers did decent and then it became like a mega hit on video. So they did a sequel and it became a bigger hit and so on and so forth. That's like the rare exception. There's far more opportunities where it's like a Dumb and Dumber or it's Zoolander 2 or it's the two Jakes or it's any of those things where it just didn't need to happen. Nobody wanted it. I think some studio execs are just desperate for brand recognition and they throw this in the pipeline and then we're stuck with 45 of these things every year.
Why do you think we keep getting Scooby-Doo movies? Because they're good?
Well, you know, in the case of Zoolander, I think the reason why it came back to us and we got the steaming pile that we got was because the legs it had on the internet. I mean, it was still very quotable. It was still, there were still a lot of people who used memes from it. I mean, it was still out there and in the forefront. So I can't really blame them for trying. I just wish it was executed better.
I can blame them. Absolutely. You made a movie based on some popular memes. Come on, man. Everything's a meme these days.
That's true.
Yeah. There's probably a better sequel was a meme at some point.
You could just use an animated GIF of him doing Blue Steel over and over again. That probably would have been about as successful as the movie was.
And I think I'd
watch that too.
Yeah, I would too. And I would definitely watch a Lion King sequel where they toss the cub off the cliff. Make that happen, Hollywood. I would be there. I'd watch it every day. Every day. All right. Have you ever seen a sequel to a movie that you didn't want a sequel to and it was actually better than the original?
You know, for me, this is kind of the Empire Strikes Back memorial question. Not to say that I didn't want a sequel, but Star Wars is in and of itself, it is a complete film. It's got your beginning, your middle, it's got your ending with your ceremony and the medals. Everybody looks beautiful. The Death Star has been blown up. Our good guys have saved the day. It is a complete and total story, started and finished all on its own. It really didn't need any kind of sequel to it. And at the time, I was just kind of wondering why chance tarnishing the first film with a second one. Who knew Lawrence Kasdan was going to come in and write this amazing sequel that's even better than the original was? You know, or Aliens. Alien is a perfectly complete film. Beginning, middle, and end. She wins. The alien gets sucked out of the airlock. You are done. It is finished. You don't need more than that. And then not only do they come back to do another film, but they completely twist it and go from horror to action.
Mm-hmm.
How is this going to work? Well, it worked like gangbusters. But you wouldn't have thought upon first hearing it, do we need this movie? Wasn't the first one sufficient? Didn't it tell what it needed to tell? So for me, those are two examples of a sequel actually coming out and being better than the original. I understand there's some people who like Alien more than Aliens. That's perfectly acceptable, and I understand that. But I don't think anybody could say that Empire is not better than the first film, Star Wars.
How did I not?
I do hope.
How did I not see that you were going to find a way to make Star Wars part of this? I didn't even think of it. Damn it.
John, what I me.
Yep, as you are you. John, what about you? Is there any that you didn't want but turned out better?
You know, can I remind you guys of a little movie called G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra?
Okay.
That movie was a steaming pile of garbage.
Fun.
Well, no, it wasn't a bad movie. And it was
one
actually
of those movies that's so bad I liked it.
And like my wife and I, we don't argue to any great degree. You know, we probably have maybe an argument a year.
Are you sure you're married?
Sometimes. What's
that's
that?
Not right? Healthy, bro.
Yeah, that's not healthy. Are you sure you're married? Because maybe it's just on paper. I don't know.
It might be just on paper, but yeah. We actually don't really argue much. We got into a nasty fight for G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra because I really wanted to see it. I was coming off of my Transformers high, and I thought, this is going to be great. And no, it was bad. It was so bad, I couldn't even lie to myself about it. Mm-hmm. And then the announcement of the sequel came out, and I'm thinking, this is a bad idea. And as they started announcing more things, The Rock's going to be it. How is The Rock going to save this movie? Oh, Channing Tatum's going to be back for 10 minutes of the movie.
The Rock could have saved JonBenet Ramsey. He could save anything.
Well, thanks to G.I. Joe Retaliation, I now believe every ounce of what you just said. He can save anything because Retaliation was a fun rock and roll movie. And I truly enjoyed it. Another one that I thought of was Star Trek Wrath of Khan.
Movie,
good one.
Yeah. It's the first movie, Star Trek the Motion Picture. It cost them $35 million to make it. And they only, it grossed, total gross was $82 million. So I don't know. I guess that's not back in 1979. That wasn't really that big of a win. But they only spent $11 million to make Wrath of Khan, and they made $78 million off of that. So, and it's as far as the Star Trek movies go, it's the most quoted one. It's the biggest one. It's the one everyone always goes to. It's my favorite as well.
And that was like 1982 money. So that's like hookers
like
and blow
billion
money.
Dollars yeah, now, right.
That's a lot of money.
I'll tell you what, if The Rock had been on the Titanic, he had punched that iceberg right into Johnson.
He would. Oh, he would have punched it in its candy ass. That's what he would have done.
That's right.
Oh,
or he'd have dived into the ocean, and he would have dragged that ship back to port.
He would have just looked at it, and it would have moved out of his way.
That's right.
That
there's nothing that man can't do.
Paint me, Jack. Paint me. All right. The ones I would pick, where I mentioned Austin Powers. I wasn't a big fan of the first movie. Didn't need a sequel, didn't want a sequel, didn't understand why I was getting one. Yeah. The second one, I laughed my ass off. And I've got a big ass, and I laughed it off. It is one of the funniest movies I've, to this day, have seen. I've quoted that movie a billion times. Half the time, I don't even realize I'm quoting it. So that was a big shock for me. And I eat because I'm unhappy, and I'm unhappy because I eat. You know, just everything about that movie cracks me up. The other one is Chronicles of Riddick. That's a big one for me.
That's a good one.
Yeah, because Pitch Black, and I've told, I don't know how many times I've told this story on the show, but when I saw Pitch Black, I hated that movie. I thought it was awful. The only thing I liked was the character of Riddick. Now, I've come to appreciate it more like over time, but when I first saw it in the theater, I'm like, this movie sucks. And it's just one of those rare exceptions where a movie gets better the more times you watch it, my opinion. When they announce a sequel, I'm like, why? I mean, like... Of all the people, all the movies in the world, I mean, I get it. Vin Diesel's the shit right now, but do we need another Riddick movie? And I thought that was a really cool way that they really broke that story out. They expanded it. They made a whole universe where I didn't think a universe belonged, and they made it its own thing. It was really, even though it didn't do as well as people hoped, for me, it was a really cool experience because, you know, fans made that movie happen, and we got a much bigger universe than we probably deserved. Honestly,
yeah, it, I loved the whole look of that universe they made. They made something that was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we didn't get much after that with the third movie. It was more just a Pitch Black direct sequel to Pitch Black, which mm-hmm. I think Justin and I were sad about. I don't know about you, John, but you know, we kind of wanted more Underverse, but still mm-hmm. that second one, man, it really opened it up to where it's like, wow, you really made something interesting where I didn't think anything interesting was.
I like that one. And I like the third one. The third one was, for me, was fun, but it's one of those things where I'm like, what do I want? I want fun. I want fun. And that's where that third one lies.
I liked it. I mean, we all liked it. It's just, I really liked where they were going with everything. And the idea of someone like Riddick being in charge of the universe could have been really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So what, with that original criteria I gave you at the beginning, what are your top three most unnecessary sequels and why? You can go first, John. You're our guest. What are your top three? Or do you guys want to do 3, 2, 1 so that John doesn't steal all of your picks, Justin? How do you want to do that?
Sure, let's do it that way.
All right, let's do 3, 2, 1. So we'll just do John, Justin, me, and we'll do it till we get to. So, John, what's your number three?
My number three, I'm doing this actually for my brother, Scotty. Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Mm.
Because it's a video game, and they turned it into a movie. And the first one was nothing more than a great techno soundtrack and Christopher Lambert with a bad wig. And then they said, you know, it'd be a great idea. Let's change out Christopher Lambert for Dexter's dad, and let's do this all over again. And it just was not really a good movie in any way, shape, or form. So they went from bad or mediocre to even worse.
Mm, that's good. That's good.
God, I remember when that first Mortal Kombat came out. I was so pumped.
Mortal Kombat.
Well, that soundtrack does half the job for you.
Oh, hell yeah, it does.
Mm-hmm. I want to kick some ass. I bet The Rock could come in and do Mortal Kombat 3 and you'd love that movie.
Fair.
He's that ingredient you can add in any stew and it's always going to be a little better.
Exactly. He's tasty.
You're tempting me to get into a Rock tangent here because I can talk about all movies that I liked with Rock in it and I should actually hate. So
maybe we should talk about Rock and Vin Diesel and how they're fighting on the internet. I think that'd be cool, but we don't do that kind of thing here. But it's
still they're besties again.
Oh, what, they made up?
Yeah, they made up.
Oh, that was quick.
I was following that like it was important.
Just like it mattered, right?
Like it mattered. Like, oh no, they can't fight.
I gotta have my Fast 9. We can't have that messed up. I love that there's actually articles because he does an Instagram post and doesn't mention people. It's like if he didn't mention Vin Diesel, oh, you know that was directed at Vin Diesel, yo. He's totally throwing shade that way, yo. Mm-hmm. Just freaking
yeah, bro. Yeah, bro.
Exactly. Yeah, bro. Yeah, bro. Did you see Sausage Party yet, Justin?
No.
God, go do
God
it.
Damn it.
You will love it. You will love it. All right, Justin, what's your number three?
My number three, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Let's take two films based on a serial killer that has built this franchise. Or not a serial killer. What would you call him? A psychopath?
I call him the fun police. That's what I call him.
Well, Shatner with a knife.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take these two great films. Well, you know, depending on your love for the second one. And let's go ahead and follow it up with a movie that has nothing at all to do with Mike Myers, that has nothing at all to do with anything we've done in these first two movies. And then let's make it crappy. And then you get Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, a supernatural story in the midst of what had been just a psycho slasher story. It makes no sense. I don't know who thought this was a good idea. And I really hope that they got fired and later got in a car accident and got harmed because that's what they deserved.
We got that jingle.
Oh, yes.
I was about to say, we got that jingle that just sticks with you and does not let go.
8 more days till Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. So love it. I love it. My number three is going to be Blues Brothers 2000. And that's because it should almost be a crime, honestly. I think Blues Brothers is one of the for me, most iconic movies in history. Like, it's just one of those movies where it stands on its own, leave it the hell alone. And then decades later, they decide to try to recreate it without the coolest half of that duo, with his generic brother. I mean, basically, it's like you went to Walmart and picked up a brother, threw him in a movie, And I mean, the music was great. I actually love the soundtrack to this, but the movie's awful. Jim Belushi, you're just not your brother. He should have stuck to canine sequels. And this was the movie for me that made me stop respecting Dan Aykroyd. Cause I felt this was like you were cashing in on your best friend's memory just to make a buck. And I just do not understand it. It was one of the most unnecessary movies I've ever seen. I don't get it. There you go. That's my number three.
Good pick.
That's a good pick.
All right. What's number two, John?
Jaws the Revenge. Mm. So we take one of the most iconic horror movies and it does great. We then make a sequel and it's kind of a copy and paste of the first movie, but still very good. We take a third movie, we add Dennis Quaid,
yes!
add Louis Gossett Jr.,
yes!
and put Leah Thompson running around in a bikini.
Yes!
You're speaking my language.
And 3D, and bitch.
3D.
Mm-hmm.
And 3D. And then we go to Bahamas with following the mom of the whole story, and it's a roaring shark. It roared. Why? Why did it roar?
Roar!
Did it roar? I don't remember it roaring.
It had a lion roar.
Did it really? All I remember is Mario Van Peebles and that really bad accent. And Michael Caine, like, cashing a check.
Yeah, man.
Like, they should have just had a picture of him actually cashing a check. Did he really roar?
It really roared. And the mouth didn't move. I've said enough, I think.
Well, it's because it's a telepathic roar.
Right. Yes.
Obviously.
This is like It's like somebody said, you know what, in the future, someone's going to make a train movie, and that train movie is going to have a roar to it. So let's beat it to having a roar. But the train movie still made more sense to have a roar than the shark.
Was the train targeting people off the tracks? Because that's what the shark was doing. It was a personal vendetta that the fish had.
But the train was being mounted by... oh my God! We just said his name, Denzel Washington. So it could have done whatever we wanted to do. I think
I like that. All right, Justin.
Are sharks fish?
Whatever. Yes, fish. Whatever. No, Justin.
I think they are.
Are they fish?
Yes, they're fish.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, then okay. I called this one right, and
you sure did. That's rare.
And you were ready to call me out too, weren't you?
I did ask first. Is it a fish? Just because I wasn't sure.
What's funny is that this whole conversation actually happens with Dennis Quaid in the third movie.
Oh, that's
did the conversation happen in 3D? Was it in your face?
Oh, of course.
I actually like that movie. I don't care what anybody says. It's not good, and the effects are awful now, but I still like it for some reason.
How did Leah Thompson look?
Oh, gorgeous. We just saw her at the Chicago Comic Con Scott and I went to. She still looks great. If she was my mom, I get Marty. I get where he's coming from. You know what I'm saying?
No, if you're Calvin.
Yeah, if you're Calvin. You're right. If you're Calvin. All right, what's your number two, Justin?
You know, it's funny that we've been talking so many horror movies. Well, here's another one. Let's take the best horror, probably, arguably, the greatest horror film ever made. And now let's take a big steaming dump. Right in the middle of it, and call it Exorcist 2. The only real returning character that I can remember being in that film being the central character of Regan. But now let's go ahead and involve all this other weird crap that didn't need to be there, these visuals that make no sense, and basically let's make a film that nobody could really understand, nobody likes, and really not make too much money off of it. And if it wasn't for Exorcist 3, Legion would probably have left the worst taste in our mouths ever, especially given the two, not just one, two versions of a prequel, both of which sucked balls.
Wow, you're really passionate about this one, aren't you?
Well, I love The Exorcist. It's one of my favorite films of all time. Probably for me, the scariest movie that's ever been made. I love the book. I think William Peter Blatty's book is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I think Legion was a phenomenal movie and a phenomenal book. But then in the middle of, on the other side of Legion, you're getting just crap. I mean, Exorcist 2 is a steaming dump pile. If it was the last movie on Earth and it was on fire, I wouldn't waste a piss to put it out.
Whoa.
And then the prequels are even worse because they're boring. Exorcist should be anything but boring. And somehow they had two different directors try it. Both of them came out with this boring crap. Exorcist 2 never needed to be made. It shouldn't have been made. And in my opinion, it mars the legacy of an incredible, incredible horror film.
That's a good pick, man.
That's a really good pick.
Yeah, it was a really good pick. My number two is Basic Instinct Part 2. There were honestly two reasons why I love the original. One is Michael Douglas. The other one is Sharon Stone's vagina. And I don't know why you would make a sequel to a movie without one of those components. I mean, I just don't. It's a real sleazy and cool story, and it worked as one movie. I just don't see any point whatsoever to make a second one. It never needed a part two. I think Sharon Stone tried. She did everything she could, but the movie just went nowhere. I tried to watch it because I did like the first one, and I'm sorry. I didn't realize how much Michael Douglas mattered to that movie until I actually watched the sequel. I'm like, wow, it really... That movie worked because of Michael Douglas, not Sharon Stone, which surprised me because, I mean, that's all anybody talked about was Sharon Stone in the original.
Well, in the original, you had the beaver, so...
It matters. Yeah.
It matters.
It does.
The movie that beaved the world.
All right, number one. What's your most unnecessary sequel ever?
I've got a really interesting one because on one side, it is the most
unnecessary. We'll be the judge of that, all right.
Yeah, once you hold tight, pal. Let's go. Come on.
On the one side, it's the most unnecessary one. On the other side, if it wasn't for this, we wouldn't have the joy that is The Fast and the Furious, which the most unnecessary movie out of that whole series is Tokyo Drift. It did introduce us to one of my favorite characters in the whole series, but otherwise, I didn't care about anything that had to do with that movie. I didn't care about drifting through the mountains of Japan. Yes, pretty. Nice to look at. It's great. I didn't care about the lead character. Okay, this guy's milquetoast. And I didn't care about the girl. Okay, she's pretty. What else she got? Mm-hmm. What else? But I cared about Han, and that was it. But I didn't know why I should care about this guy. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't for the fact that they turned the series around and brought back more and added more through the other movies to that movie, it would fall on its face. And the first movie made its money. The second movie made even more money. And then the third one didn't even make its production value. I don't even know how a fourth one happened.
Vin Diesel said, "All right, I'll do it. Yeah, I'll do it for family. I'll do it.
I'll start saying family every 5 seconds.
Yeah, I'll do it. I'm monosyllabic. Yeah, that's what I'll do. I'll make these movies for $20 million. That's what I'll do." That's why.
John, you sound a little more Snake Plissken than Diesel.
Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah,
that's a compliment. What do you think, Justin? Right. I mean, we're all fans of the Fast and Furious, but I do got to say the lead Texas Yeehaw in that third one really does kill
that
movie.
He's awful.
Yeah, he's bad.
He is so awful. And when he uses that accent, it actually makes me feel bad for all of my fellow Texans that he's just got to hayseed it on up. Yep. When he out there, he just talk like an idiot. Oh, Jesus Christ. He's a terrible actor.
He is.
He was fine in the X-Files movie because he had like 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. But he has been horrible in just about everything I've ever seen him in. Why he gets cast and stuff, I have no idea. Unless it's for like, you know, Friday Night Lights, in which he kind of works there. But other than that, he's shit. The story was crap, but we did get Han. And it did continue the public awareness of a franchise that did not only pick itself up and dust itself off, but became a global sensation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it got way better. I will say he's so bad when he pops up. Was it the recent one, right? Furious 7. Yeah. When he's so bad, when he popped up, I forgot Paul Walker died, and B. realized that he sucks so bad he stops the movie for me completely. I literally sat in my chair and went, "Oh, why is he here?" And
that was the most jarring part of that movie, because he came in and you're right, he stopped it. But I was also really concerned with how old he suddenly looked. They used old footage from Tokyo Drift. Then they show him as he is now, and I couldn't get past the aging.
Now he looks like he's 50.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. I mean, it's like he hasn't even tried to keep up with himself. Come on, man.
He comes on the screen and all of a sudden Ludacris looks like he's Shakespearean level actor. That's a feat.
Oh, man. And Tyrese is runner up. So, all right, Justin,
so bad.
What's your number one? Well, he's got a great forehead, so you got that going on.
Oh yeah, he got a big forehead. He's got like a 5 or a 6 head.
Oh man.
For me, this is not only, I probably labeled it my worst sequel ever, and it still holds that distinction, but it's also the most unnecessary sequel that I have ever seen, and that is Highlander 2: The Quickening. Hmm. Highlander is I'm not going to say perfect, but it is a fantastic film, and it is complete in its story. You get this, basically, it's almost this medieval fantasy story of a character who's a Highlander in Scotland who learns that he's immortal, and he must do battle with all of these other immortals by cutting their heads off and consuming the energy, the quickening that all these immortals have got, until there's finally only two, and then they must battle because there can be only one. And so we had just the one, and it worked, and it was perfect, and it told the story it needed to tell. You are done. Cash that check. Go on about your business. Well, not only did they not cash that check, they made another film, and then what they did is they took a film that was so great in its fantasiness and said, well, screw all that. We're going to go ahead and make this thing sci-fi. And all those people that you thought were dead, some of them may not be quite so dead. And yeah, we're basically going to take everything that worked and make it not work. And if you don't like it, well, too bad for you. Highlander 2 and the rest of those Highlander movies and the TV shows, they can all go take in a long walk off a short pier, because they're completely unnecessary. That first film was all we ever needed. Why they felt the need to trash it with all these things that came afterward, I'll never, ever understand. But Highlander 1, you are a phenomenal movie, and I just pretend the rest of it does not exist.
All right. Well, I think somebody's pretty passionate about that pick. Yeah,
he's got a lot of feelings. I don't blame him for those feelings.
No, that movie is awful. It's just god awful. I can't believe they got Sean Connery to do it at all.
Oh God, talk about cashing a check
for as long as he was in that movie.
Mm-hmm. He probably got $10 million. I bet you. My number one is The Crow, City of Angels. That is the sequel.
Good pick.
Yeah, to the Brandon Lee movie. The original film resolved the story, man. I mean, that story was done. The sequel was pretty much the same story, just had a son instead of a fiance, and you're pretty much doing the same thing. Your leading man died as a result of the original movie. It didn't need to happen. This movie was about as needed as Brandon Lee needed that blank in the chest. It just didn't need to happen, and they still made it happen. And I tried watching it. I don't know if it was because I was curious, or maybe I thought, well, maybe this will help his legacy. I don't know what I was thinking, but watching it, all I kept thinking was everyone involved should be ashamed of themselves for being involved. There's just no reason for it. And it just almost made me angry as a moviegoer.
That's a strong pick. I agree with you. I tried watching that movie several times.
And you didn't like it, or you just couldn't watch it because of the Brandon Lee effect?
Well, the Brandon Lee movie was gorgeous. The story, the art, the look of it, how they completed it with as little of the movie Brandon Lee was in, that was just a miracle. Mm-hmm. The second movie was sad. Every time I tried to watch it, which was only on HBO or Showtime or whatever it popped up, I could only get a couple minutes into it and be like, nope. Pass.
Mm-hmm.
And change it to something else, just because the story did not grab me. I don't know if it was Brandon Lee, because as much as that's a sad story, it didn't have as strong of an effect on me as sad he died, but you know, move on and do something else with your time, and not worry so much about a guy who, though great in that movie, what had two or three other movies under his belt when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as big of an effect when he died, but it was a But the, everything they did for that movie itself was beautiful around that death. I don't think the second one to me was the reason why I didn't like it, what had anything to do with it. It was just bad. Mm-hmm. The third one, on the other hand, I kind of liked that one. It was.
Isn't that the one with Boreanaz?
No,
the guy that plays Angel.
Fourth one, I think.
Yeah.
There's a fourth.
Yeah. There's like four. Yeah. There's four of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a TV show, I think, because it takes a season to get revenge. I don't know.
See, I could actually see a TV show being done in The Crow where each episode was a different person he had to go after or something. I mean, hell, they made TV shows off of flimsier premises, but I could actually see that working.
The TV show was okay. It was Mark Dukakis as The Crow, and I loved him, and I tried watching it for him, but it was
You mean Iron Chef America?
Yeah, Iron Chef America. I prefer to think of him as I think the Turbo was the name of a movie that he was in that was amazing. It was him and not Wyclef Jean, the guy from A Different World.
I remember who you're talking about. Dwayne? But I can't recall his name.
Yeah,
Dwayne Wayne.
Dwayne Wayne were in a movie called Turbo together, and that movie was great. So I watched it for that reason, but I couldn't.
He was great in a French film, The Brotherhood.
The Brotherhood of the Wolf. Yeah, that was pretty.
Yeah.
Good.
Oh, look at you guys bonding. It's cute.
Welcome to Tangent Cast, everyone.
No, it's fine. Hey, we got all the time in the world, man. Scott's not here. So let's go to, I don't know what that meant, but it'll make him sad, so I like it. Let's go to our listener comments where we ask them what their picks for we actually asked, what is the most unnecessary movie sequel ever? And just like our listeners always like to do, some of them gave us like two or three picks. But let's just read them off in the order of Justin, John, and me. Justin, you go first.
Sean R. McGuire says Crocodile Dundee 2.
I like that one, though. I did like that movie.
I didn't really like the first one much.
Well, you're wrong. That's a big dose of wrong. Drink it. Awesome.
I really like the story of it going back to the Outback. I really love that.
So did I.
Have y'all listened to the How Did This Get Made for Crocodile Dundee 2?
Mm-mm.
Oh, it's hysterical. You need to listen to it.
Okay. I will, boss. This has been,
yes, sir.
This ad has been brought to you by How Did This Get Made via Justin McComber. All right, John.
Philip Thompson, Dumb and Dumber, because it really wasn't necessary. It didn't have the original actors and it was terrible. Dumb and Dumber 2, because it was way too long between movies. I'm hoping the same wasn't true for Bad Boys.
You got hung up because there was only 1 O and 2, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
I thought so. I respect that.
That was totally a Justin stop. I'm just listening going, that's what Justin would do. And he did.
Scotch Calgaro.
Hey, it's my turn. Thing. Hey,
oh,
hey, I'm in this. Right. Stop kicking me to the curb. Like I don't exist.
Hey, play nice.
God, you're grounded. Scotch Calgaro says The Thing, 2011.
What a crap movie.
Was it crap? I never finished it.
Ugh, it's crap. You're better off.
All right.
Chris Owens, Caddyshack 2 takes the cake.
God, that was bad. Yeah.
It's all right.
Now here's my question. Now, this is supposed to be the most unnecessary sequel. So I get where Crocodile Dundee 2 would come into play because Crocodile Dundee did finish its story. It wasn't necessary. Do you think some people are throwing the most awful sequel in there or just Caddyshack it didn't need a sequel?
What do you think? Bit of A, bit of B.
Okay. Just asking.
Throw it out there. I never saw Caddyshack 2. Was this The Revenge of the Groundhog?
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, then I should maybe see that.
Don't.
Did he dance
Chevy
a lot?
Chevy Chase and the Groundhog were the stars.
And the day keeps repeating. It's weird.
Yeah. Don't drive angry. Don't drive angry.
You're up, John.
Caleb Graham, Jaws 2. Yes, Jaws was a huge hit, but it was such a special movie. They should have left it alone. Plus, Jaws 2 set a dangerous precedent, and then the other two sequels happened.
Ooh.
Well, I think we covered that.
Can I just say I like Jaws 2 because Roy Scheider's in it, and they do the cool like holding the power line, and he doesn't get electrocuted. I always thought that was kind of cool.
It would actually set up for bad things to happen for kids in the 80s and 90s when we didn't have the supervision.
Mm-hmm.
Not that anything ever happened to me.
When our parents let us do whatever we pretty much wanted to.
Right. Just don't bother me, kid. Just go put your left fork in the oh, now he's out all the day.
Courtney Davenport. I don't know who that is. But, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. What?
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's my turn. Why do you want me not to go?
I want all the turns. God. I need all the turns.
Courtney Davenport. No relation, I'm sure. Mannequin 2, because why? That's a great question. And I'll tell you why. Because Christy freaking Swanson is in it. That's why. That's why.
She is so beautiful.
Yeah. Christy Swanson.
She's still pretty.
All day, every day, every day of my life.
She was the only decent thing in that Buffy movie. Angela Lee Willick says Hangover 2 and 3. Blech. I actually really like Hangover 2. I may like it more than the original.
I
thought the original was really funny. The third one, yeah, it was really stretched too thin by that point. But I think the second Hangover is really underrated by people.
I like the second one too. But the three.
I mean, the dude lost a finger.
Mm-hmm. And there's a little Asian penis. How is that bad? That's
the good. Monkeys play with its weenus.
Little shiitake mushroom.
I got to watch that. You're up, John.
Ty Nelson, Blues Brother 2000, 20 years had passed since the original and 18 since John Belushi's death. Not once in that time did anyone think, hey, I wonder what the Blues Brothers are up to, except maybe Jim Belushi's checkbook.
Chimp book is better.
Chimp.
Let's go with chimp book.
We're going to go with chimp book, yes.
That's a great pick. I say it because it was mine too.
You picked it.
Brady Joe, this is Halloween 3. There was no Michael Myers, no Jamie Lee Curtis, no point. But even if they had changed the title and not ridden on the coattails of the Halloween brand, this movie would still have sucked big, giant, Shatner-sized balls.
Some big balls.
How you doing?
How you doing, Brady Joe?
I love that she said big, giant, Shatner-sized balls. Justin, it's your turn. You can go now.
Oh, yay. Steve Peterson says... S. Darko?
Mm-hmm.
What is S. Darko?
It's a sequel to Donnie Darko.
That had a sequel?
Mm-hmm. That had a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that just passed right by me. The Rage, Carrie 2, and American Psycho 2. That one starred Mila Kunis.
Mila Kunis, right? Yep.
All were sequels to great, very close-ended movies that, while most people loved them, no one wanted to see more of.
Yeah, that Darko one is awful. Awful.
Sean Eames Fuller.
I didn't really like the first Johnny Darko myself. Or Donnie Darko.
What did you say, Johnny Darko?
Yeah, I have such little regard for that film, I don't even remember the title.
Is that the Canadian version?
Yeah.
It's a bunch Johnny of Darko, eh? About it. All right, Sean Ian Fuller, Blair Witch 2 and the Hangover sequels. Blair Witch 2 for me is another one that I tried to watch and I just couldn't get past any of it. I would try to watch it again because it'd be on. I'll do it again. It's on Showtime. Nope. Pass.
It's not good.
I didn't hate it, but it wasn't nearly as good as I was hoping for. I think I let the attractiveness of one of the actresses kind of carry me through all the bumps and plot holes that were in that movie.
I know it's rare. I am shocked. I tell you, shocked. Craig Schermerhorn. Ooh, he's going all out on this. Toy Story 2. And before anybody spits on him,
that son of a bitch.
This is just based on the criteria that it wasn't necessary because the first one was amazing, could be considered complete, and completely stands on its own. So glad they kept making them, but if it is a question of necessity, I say Toy Story 2.
I almost said the same thing. It was going to be on my list, and then I thought, I will get lynched if I mention a Pixar movie in this list, so I'll go ahead and ignore it. Craig Schermerhorn, you've got bigger Shatner balls than I do.
Oh, boy. That just happened.
Brian Lowry says, American Psycho B. I'm assuming he means American Psycho 2.
Anna Marie Joris, I actually haven't seen Independence Day 2, but it seems unnecessary to me. The story was done, and it was a long, long time between original and sequel. I never saw that one either.
I saw it, and she's right. Yep. You're right on. Yep. Poor Jeff Goldblum. Wayne Henderson. Oh, I'm so glad I ended up with this one. The Matrix.
Stabbed me in the heart.
Although I like the second and the third movies, nothing was necessary in them. The first Matrix was a great self-contained movie and story. Wayne, high five on your brother. High five.
I can agree with that. The first one, when it ended, if they had never come back with anything else, I would have been entirely satisfied.
I will tell you.
It had that perfect Superman ending.
I watched the first one to the end. I feel like it's complete. I can't watch the second one without watching the third one because they're connected. And I've said my discrepancies and my grievances on the third one before, so it doesn't work for me. Although the second one's not a bad movie.
Tamala Plame says, Godfather 3. That movie killed my love of the franchise. It was supposed to be 8 years later, and because I was already seeing Pacino when I was saying later, so Lato. 8 years later, and Al Pacino looked like he'd aged 100 years. Mm-hmm. Also, that movie started my dislike of talentless Sofia Coppola.
Ooh, ballsy. I agree with her.
Sofia Coppola, she did Lost in Translation, didn't she?
She did. Yep, she did.
That's a good film.
I'm not a fan. It's a great acting piece, but as a movie, I see where she's coming from. I don't find her to be a talented director, personally. But a lot of people love that movie, so her and I are on our own, I guess.
Art Pennington, The Mask 2.
Oh, God.
That's the son. I couldn't
even bring myself to watch that one.
Is that the son of The Mask?
Yeah.
Yes.
I never watch it. Is it that bad?
It's terrible. Who was the lead guy in that? What was his name? He was in Scream. He was the one who kept telling them.
Jamie
Kennedy.
Jamie Kennedy.
Oh, yes. He's so... He could ruin anything. I think he could be in a Rock movie and somehow ruin it. I don't even know if The Rock is enough to overcome his suckitude.
That's why you're so happy when he got killed. Spoiler!
Oh, and Scream 2. Yes, please bring him back to life and kill him again.
Michael Bonovich. S. Darko jumped to mind, but since it was already said, The Lost Boys, The Tribe. It didn't go to theaters, but I didn't mention that in the group. So, very good.
Andrew Jeeves says Ocean's 12, Mortal Kombat Annihilation, and Speed 2, Cruise Control. Agreed on every single one of those.
Yep. Damn straight.
Carlos Hernandez, Zoolander 2, enough said.
Well, if it was enough said, we wouldn't have all these other ones, but I get what you're saying. Alexander Wass, for me, it has to be Speed 2. What a pointless turd of a film. Can we just mention, if your leading man, I mean, Sandra Bullock is great, but if your leading man is Keanu Reeves and you decide to do a sequel to a hit action movie that's based solely on Keanu Reeves, really, is that a good plan? Does that even make sense?
No.
It's like, we'll connect it because we'll have the adorable bus driver in this one, too. And apparently she still dates hero cops. That's all she dates. That's weird. Okay, you're up, Justin.
Ryan Boyles, Grease 2. Nobody's mentioned it yet, and I'm kind of surprised because that movie sucked. Mm-hmm.
With the exception of Michelle Pfeiffer.
Well, yeah, you put her in black and you've got gold.
You put her in anything or nothing. All of the above. Mm. Easy. Easy. John, you got the last one.
Flora Sensoris, Highlander 2.
Okay. Agreed.
I hope that's her name, Flora Sensoris. That sounds awesome. That is a great name.
It rhymes a lot. It sounds like a character Meryl Streep will play someday. So of all these movies we've named, including our own, including these, each one of us, I say we pick. What is, of all of them, and you can pick your own if that's what you feel like, but what is the most unnecessary sequel, John?
You know what? I'm convinced Highlander 2 can burn in hell.
Ooh. Justin?
Sure. I'll go with Highlander 2. It was my pick. Loved it. I mean, I hate that. Oh, God, I almost just let fly a stream of F words.
Whew. Easy, easy.
In, out.
I'm going to actually, Woosa. I think I've talked myself into Speed 2. Now I've seen it a couple times. I'm like, man, the more I think about it, the more angry it's making me. And it's just a horrible, horrible, unnecessary idea. And Jason Patrick, that's your guy? Come on.
Oh, he's so awful. God. How did he get a career?
Lost Boys. That's it.
Lost Boys.
Yeah.
That was it? All right. That's the movie we have to blame for him having a career.
And I think he did one movie where he was really good, where it's like a drug
movie. He did that cocaine movie.
Yeah, that's it. And everybody knows he did that one movie. Nobody can remember the name of it, but that's Rush. Rush. Oh, what'd you do, Google it? Cheater.
My hands were not even on the screen.
Sure. They're in your pants.
Bum, bum. Whenever I hear Justin's voice, that's right where mine go. So I gotcha. All right.
Soothe the ache.
I think Highlander 2 wins.
Oh, wait, man.
What happened? I heard an egg. That's all I heard.
He said I had to soothe the ache.
Oh, God. 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 No kids are listening now. All right. Well, what's this movie? We're going to move into what's this movie. And we have tweaked this, my friends. We have changed this a little bit because we decided... I got some feedback. I've actually had this feedback from several weeks of asking around that what's this movie is great, but wouldn't it be great if sometimes it's a little bit more challenging or maybe you did it a different way so it's not just a clip every week? And I thought, well, you know what? That is a great idea. So we're going to do it a little different and we're going to try it out. If you guys don't like it, so be it. But each week we're going to pick a movie suggested by either our host or a listener. And the person that picks it has the option to either play a clip, offer a what am I, a limerick, a riddle, or a haiku, whatever, or reenact a famous quote from their movie. If you think you know what that movie is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com, or through the contact tab in your app, and we'll give you a proper ho shout out on the last episode. Last week's clip was Alexander Wass's pick, and that movie was Black Hawk Down. Those that guessed it correctly were Melanie Hastie, Amy Hutchison, and Michael Lonergan. Congratulations, guys. Now, this week, it is Michael McGraw's chance to confuse us all. And
David McGraw, but, you know.
What'd I say?
Whatever. Michael.
Michael.
Did I say Michael? Well,
yes.
He goes by many names. He's like a super spy. David McGraw's chance, and he gave us a limerick. So, are you guys ready? Here it is.
I'm
ready.
I'm ready.
Okay. Hickory dickory dock. It all comes down to the clock. When there's stormy weather, the plot comes together, and the hero is off like a shot. If you think you know what movie that is, email us feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com or hit contact on your
app.
Give
it to us again.
Hickory dickory dock. It all comes down to the clock. When there's stormy weather, the plot comes together and the hero is off like a shot. Don't guess until after the show, Justin, because I know you. All right. Now we go into our spoiler-free reviews where we've got a few of them for you. The first one is Don't Breathe, which is we're also going to talk about again here shortly, but... Justin, what is Don't Breathe about?
Well, Don't Breathe is a film that you and I talked quite a bit about from South by Southwest because we actually had a chance to see the film there. Mm-hmm. It's written and directed by Fede Alvarez and Roto Sayagus.
Sure.
Is also one of the writers.
Yeah.
Anyway, it stars Jane Levy, Stephen Lang, and Dylan Minnette. It's about these three people who want to rob this old man because they believe he has a lot of money stashed in his house and they want to make this like their last score before they all kind of head out their separate ways. What they unfortunately come to find out is that even though this man is blind, he's not as disabled as they'd like to think he is. And this film goes in some pretty dark, and I mean that literally as well as figuratively, areas. I mean, remember near the end with the thing and the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whoa!
Yeah. Well, yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
But we really enjoyed this film quite a bit when we saw it. It's a very taut thriller. It's so much darkness in which this movie takes place in, given the fact that one of the lead actors is blind in it. They want to try and put you in his world. And I think they do so really successfully. You and I both seem to love it quite a bit, but tell me kind of your recollections.
This is one of the, still for me, I mean, the year's almost over, best horror movie of the year for me. It is a simple, simple premise. It is not complicated. Justin explained the entire movie. It's all a matter of using the location, a very, very small, isolated location for these people to maneuver through as they discover each other and they seek to find, they find a little bit of the truth of this house as they go. And it's just, it's a really, really tense movie, and there's some great scenes, great atmosphere, a strong direction. I mean, just everything about this really just took me by surprise. I expected a movie I was looking forward to. I thought it was going to be like a gore fest or something, because Fede Alvarez also did the Evil Dead remake, and that's what I was expecting.
Which rained blood.
Yes. I mean, I'm still bloody from seeing that movie. This is not like that. It's much more about the suspense. It's about the tension. It's about just the atmosphere, and man, it's about some messed up stuff. Some stuff I was not expecting, and I'm not about to spoil any of that here, but it's really intense, man. It's like Hitchcock if it was made by a horror director. It's kind of hard to... wow.
If it was made by one of the Saw directors.
Exactly, yeah.
In your original review, you gave it a 7.5.
Mm-hmm.
Would you change that at all, or do you think that that's where you're sticking at?
I would raise it, honestly. I think... it's one of the very few movies, it doesn't happen very often, where it was kind of like The Guest. When I first saw The Guest, it was one of those movies where I really liked it, but I don't know if I love it. And then I couldn't stop talking about it and thinking about it and going back to it, and it became a better movie. I would probably put it around 8, 8.5 at this point. I'll say 8.5 just because I can't wait to see it, and I've already seen it, you know? So if $10 full price of admission, I would raise it to 8.50.
Yeah, I look forward to watching it again myself. This film... Because Stephen Lang's character is blind, so much of this movie revolves around sound and the little things. I mean, when you can't see, you depend on your other senses. And so when a cell phone maybe goes off, or of course you're going to hit that creaky floorboard, it works so well. And now that I've seen it, I would love to go back and see it again now that I know kind of where it's going, so I can pick up some of the other little nuances that were perhaps lost on me because of this being my initial viewing experience. But I would definitely give this a solid $8 out of 10. Thoroughly enjoyed it. I think everybody in it does a great job. And folks, when you do see it, please let us know what you think of it, especially near the end, because it gets...
different.
Yeah, I want to hear your thoughts on that ending, especially.
And I do want to add, beginning of the year, Deadpool came out, and I was very strong, because everybody's talking about Stephen Lang for Cable, and I'm like, no, he's too old. This movie, this dude is jacked. I mean, jacked. Yeah. Like, he is going to beat my ass if I ever run into him just for saying that, and I'm afraid of him now. That's how good he is in this movie. He's just, man, I could see him as Cable, and I could see him whooping the shit out of Deadpool. Yeah, man, it was good.
He's yoked.
But I want to oversell it, but definitely check it out, and definitely please let us know what you thought.
Yep.
John, you saw Imperium. What is Imperium? What'd you think?
I let me set it up for you guys this way. I'm going to read a quote for you. You tell me how you guys feel about this quote. Words build bridges into unexplored regions. How do you guys feel about that quote?
It sounds pretty.
Yeah.
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 I'm with you.
Yeah.
Okay, I like
You're
it.
You're with it?
I like
You guys
it.
Get it?
Kind of.
Good. Hitler said it, so you're
oh,
both terrible.
Shit.
I didn't say I liked it. I just...
I hate that quote. That quote what, is honey? Bad.
I gotta go.
God.
And that's how the movie sets you up.
Does a Jew say it? Sorry.
And as I said at the opening of the show, I'm not a guy for trailers. I did watch the first few minutes of this trailer just to get a feel for it. And as soon as I saw Harry Potter, I mean, Daniel Radcliffe start really getting aggressive with people and marching down in a line, which is just all scenes you see in the trailer, I had to stop it because I really wanted to see where this story was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
I was afraid it was going to be you're a skinhead, Harry. But it really turned out, I don't even know why I was afraid of that being part of the story, but because Daniel Radcliffe has done two great movies that I've seen. In one movie, he was a love lost romantic, and another one, he was a tortured monster. And in both movies, I forgot Harry Potter was ever in his past.
Mm-hmm.
Radcliffe sold this movie for me, and he was great. The story is a young FBI agent is tasked with infiltrating a coalition of white supremacy groups and uncover a plot. The story is solid. It's great. I loved it. It's not anything different. We've seen this story before, but the way they present this story is solid. They do a really good job of sitting you into a big fluffy beanbag chair of tension. And as the movie goes on, you just sink deeper and deeper into that beanbag chair. Like I said, Daniel Radcliffe did a great job in this. The supporting characters were great. One thing that drove me a little crazy about the movie was they did this shortcut for I'm a streetwise, tough cookie of a woman with Toni Collette, and she started smacking her gum.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of drove me nuts. Why is that like the shorthand for being a tough chick, you know?
That's a really good point, actually. I've never even thought about that, but that really is like, I'm from Jersey, I'm tough, I can handle myself.
Right, like that. Absolutely. Made me crazy. However, once I finally got over that hump, she did bring a lot of insight to the story. I can't really go into the backgrounds of the quote-unquote villains of this without giving away too much of what you should be looking for or what I feel like you should be looking for in the story, but the villains were fantastic. Each one of them was scary in their own right. Each one of them just brought everything they could to this little movie. And if $10 is a full price of admission, I'd pay $7 to see it again.
Really? So it's that good.
Yep.
All right.
Do you think this film and maybe something like Green Room should be seen together?
Yeah, actually, that would be a good pairing. Green Room was, I love Green Room. And yeah, that would be a pretty great pairing in an evening.
Are you saying because they both revolve around skinheads?
Well, skinheads and then English actors portraying said skinheads.
That'd be a weird party planning. You know what? We're going to have the British actors playing skinhead party. Come on over. It's a double feature.
I'm here for the Nazi party. What?
Whoa.
What?
What? That didn't happen. That's 2 weeks in a row we denied the Holocaust. All right, Justin, you saw The Bronze. Thanks, John. Thank you. What is The Bronze, other than that's the girl from The Big Bang Theory, isn't it?
Yeah, this one stars Melissa Rauch. It, given that the Olympics are currently going on, it's the perfect time to release this movie.
Aren't they over? They're over, right?
Well, they're over now, but when this was released a week or so ago.
Gotcha.
But still, anytime around the opening and closing of the Olympics, a movie about an Olympic sport or an Olympian is a good time to release it. And in this film, which she also co-wrote with her, I'm assuming it's her brother, Winston Rauch, directed by Brian Buckley. It's about a foul-mouthed former gym. No, was it her husband?
It's her husband.
Okay. I thought she was married to Howard.
Maybe it's both. Not in real life. Dork.
But it's about a foul-mouthed former gymnastics bronze medalist with local celebrity status reluctantly training a rising Olympic aspirant. It's the story of a girl who in her Olympics got hurt and she pushed through the pain to end up getting a bronze medal, which for her and for everyone was this huge achievement given the physical trauma she went through to get that bronze. Years later, she has been living off that past glory, and this town, this small town that she lives in, has basically let her live off this past glory. They give her free food. They kind of look away when she's just being a complete and total bitch. But she's like one of those child stars that thinks that they're worth all the fame and glory, and it turns them into monsters. Mm. In the film, though, she has to now train through events I won't spoil. She has to train a young Olympian or a girl who wants to be in the Olympics to go on and perhaps eclipse her in the Olympics to gain more glory, to gain better medals. Can she do it? Can she look past her own need for attention to help this girl?
Mm-hmm.
It goes a lot of different places. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Along with Melissa Rauch, you've got Gary Cole, who plays her dad. Gary Cole is just about wonderful in everything that he does.
Agreed.
Thomas Middleditch is in it. Sebastian Stan is in it, as most people now probably know him as the Winter Soldier. But he's in it, and near the about the middle part of the movie, there is the most whacked out sex scene you will probably ever see outside of Pornhub. Because these are basically two Olympic gymnasts getting it on.
I got to watch it now.
And they get it on in ways you and I have never thought of, in ways I could never, I would go to the hospital if I attempted some of these moves that they pull on each other. But in the end, it's a heartwarming story of this girl and her finally having to grow up. I really enjoyed it. It's not a, you know, it's not a deep film, and it's not something that's going to change your life. But if you just want to sit back and have an hour and a half of your life with some, share it with some funny characters and really funny situations, you could do a whole lot worse. $0 out of $10, I'd give this $6.50.
Do you think Melissa Roche has what it takes to be a comedian on her own, like as a lead going forward?
I think that if she doesn't continue to rely on strange voices, she can, because in this movie, she's got a very thick Midwestern accent. And when she's on The Big Bang Theory, it's that really high nasally kind of voice.
Right.
If she can just speak normally, unless one of those is her normal voice, I think she could. She has a great comedic ability. She really knows the timing of it. I think she could be a bigger star. I just think she needs to be more herself and less a character actress. And I think she would do really well.
Okay. I was just curious. I've always liked her. I like her as that character, but I wondered, you know, what was the extent of her ability to a degree, just because that's all I've really seen her in.
She's funny. And she's definitely one of those actresses that I do appreciate that isn't afraid to be funny and isn't afraid to look like an idiot to be funny.
Yep.
Far too many actors out there take themselves a little too seriously and don't want to put themselves into the muck for a comedic part, but she has no reservations regarding that. And I think that's definitely a mark in her favor.
That's exactly why I don't think a Clue comedic remake could work today, just because I don't think you have enough actors like you had in the 80s that were willing to be buffoons. There's too much ego involved, too much ego.
Yep.
Okay. So here's the deal. I could either review War Dogs in full because it has that new car smell, or I could just do it real quick, and I'm going to do it real quick because I'd rather talk about something else. I'm just going to say Jonah Hill, he's great as an arms-dealing middleman, and Miles Teller is very Miles Teller as the guy Jonah dupes.
More you should rename him Miles Teller. No! Up top!
I like it. High five. It's more entertaining than I thought it was going to be, but when all that praise goes to one part of a duo, I think it kind of cements that Miles Teller is just not a leading man. If $10 is the full price of admission, I would give it $5.50. It actually was better than I thought it was going to be, but I also didn't think it was going to be very good. And I will never watch it again. What I'd rather talk about is a movie called Hell or High Water, which we talked about a couple weeks ago. And it's finally getting a national release. It was actually going limited. It's finally going national. And here's what it is. I love a good Western, and it's a genre that I think is sorely lacking the last few years. And this one is basically, it's like a modern cowboy flick. Chris Pine and Ben Foster star as Toby and Tanner Howard, Pine being the calm, level-headed one, and Tanner being the unpredictably borderline insane one, because that's what Ben Foster does. Let's be honest. They begin the movie as kind of newly minted bank robbers. They have to hit X number of banks by the end of the week to save their family ranch. And there's other factors involved that I'm not going to spoil here. And tracking them are Jeff Bridges as Texas Ranger Marcus Hamilton, or Rooster Cogburn Light, because that's his shtick. And Gil Birmingham as his Mexican Indian partner, Alberto Parker. And Bridges is basically on the verge of retirement, and Alberto just wants him to get there without annoying him to death. That's the story. That's what it is. It's basically a pair of brother bank robbers and the cop and his partner chasing them. This is a very Texas movie. And Justin, you can probably appreciate this because you live in Texas. This is based in West Texas, to be exact. And even the citizens get involved as the movie rolls on, because in Texas, what is everybody doing? They're all packing.
That's right.
Now, I got to ask you, as a Texan, if you were involved in a bank robbery, would you expect, or you were there, you were present, would you expect a Texan to pull on the robber at some point?
If you're talking about a small Western Texas town, I would go ahead and assume everybody plus the grandmother is packing.
Yep. That this movie does not deny that. And I loved that aspect of it. It adds some humor and some cool, tense action. But the story's a lot more layered than I expected it to be. It's a lot more layered than what I'm telling you because I don't want to spoil some stuff. And as you learn more about Chris Pine and Jeff Bridges' characters in particular, it really tosses in just enough moments of levity and heart to keep it from being too grim. It's really my kind of movie. Hell or High Water is just one of those movies, an entertaining character drama, but it's a modern Western. And I love modern Westerns because we don't get many of them. So if $10 is full price for admission, I would give it $8. I really enjoyed it. I really recommend it. And it's not a slow burn, it's going to be boring until the end kind of movie. It's really entertaining. There's a lot of really funny scenes too. I mean, Jeff Bridges, even though he's got a little bit of that Rooster Cogburn thing going on, is really funny as he basically racially insults his partner throughout the entire movie. And he does, man. And he does. And Ben Foster, you know, the one thing I was worried about with Ben Foster is that Ben Foster tends to play the same character every movie he's in.
He plays Ben Foster.
Yeah, he plays Ben Foster. And he kind of does that here. But as the movie goes on, he gets a little deeper too, and you kind of actually see a fully-fledged character. And Chris Pine is just phenomenal. I really think this guy is just – he just has the goods, and I don't know why he can't catch a break outside of Star Trek, but, man, I really enjoyed this movie. Definitely check it out.
Isn't he one of those actors, though, that you – it's almost like I don't want him to succeed because he's got so many – pluses already. I mean, he's a very attractive young guy. He's got a lot of talent. What more does a person need?
He can sing. He can dance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So now he's got more tools in his bag. No, he doesn't need anything more. Move on. God has blessed you plenty.
And we already got one Channing Tatum. We don't need another.
That's right. We already got one Gimp.
And he's genuinely. He seems like a genuinely nice guy.
Yep.
Yeah, I hate him.
A-hole.
Yeah. Thanks for taking all the bitches, man.
Right? I got to spend some time around Ben Foster at the Sarasota Film Festival a couple years ago, and it was interesting to me to see him, especially standing right next to Vincent D'Onofrio, because the two of them on screen are just a bag of cats, and you see them out and about and kind of drunk and having a good time. And they were just so mellow and cool. It's interesting seeing them on screen versus in person.
Really?
That's cool.
Yeah.
Look at you, name dropper. What's up? Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider.
Clank.
Hey, I only saw them. I didn't talk to them. I wasn't that brave.
Why don't you just walk up to him and be like, why am I not drinking with you? That's what you should say.
You should have said, Ben, you were the bomb in X-Men 3, yo.
He would have yelled at me for that.
And he would have known you were lying to his face.
Absolutely.
Okay, box office real quick. Suicide Squad is holding a better aim than Batman versus Superman. That's good news. With $20.8 million and a $262.5 million total.
Is that worldwide or just America?
That's just America, son. Just America. Woo-hoo! Domestic. Sausage Party got circumcised with a 55% plop to $15.5 million and a $65 million total. But
it did, bro. Yeah, it did, bro.
It did good, bro. It did good, bro.
God. I haven't even seen it, and I can't stop quoting.
Wait till you see it, and then you'll be douche-broing everywhere you go. Everywhere. War Dogs didn't put up much of a fight, probably because Miles Teller is in it, with a $14.6 million opening. He's not going to happen, people. He's the fetch of movies. Stop it.
Stop it.
Kubo is a soprano after its week $12.6 million opening. I'm really kind of sad about that. It looks like a beautiful movie. I say that, but I didn't see it, so I'm kind of part of the problem.
And I'm part of the problem, too.
Part of the problem, 3.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's really their fault, then. They should have advertised it better. And Pete's Dragon is almost extinct as it dropped 47% to $11.3 million. Woo! Yeah, for a $43 million total. Not good. Oh, Ben-Hur, that remake to a movie that even God didn't want remade, it opened in sixth place with $11.2 million, and Variety reported that they might lose $90 to $100 million on that movie.
Ben-Hur.
Damn.
Ben-Hur. Damn it! You got to write these next time. Ben-Hur.
Ben-Hur?
Like
no, Ben, not her.
Bend over.
Oh. Now you're fitting in, John. Welcome aboard.
Oh, man, we can just get rid of Scott.
That's right.
We do nothing but puns on Ben-Hur.
I don't care. It was brilliant. Well done, sir. Justin, what's coming out?
Well, folks, we've got three films coming out August 26th. The first one, Hands of Stone. The legendary Robert Duran and his equally legendary trainer, Ray Arcel, change each other's lives. This is written and directed by Jonathan Jakubowiak.
Sure.
And it stars Robert De Niro and John Turturro, as well as Ellen Barkin. I have not heard a thing about this movie. Mm-hmm. When I saw it come up on your list, I was like, that's a film?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently it is. It's listed under the action, biography, and drama section. I unfortunately, I didn't even watch a trailer for it. I meant to, and I didn't. So I really have no idea.
The trailer sneaks up on you because when you're watching it, it focuses on Robert De Niro for a good portion of it, and then you're like, "Oh, this is about Roberto Duran? Are you kidding me?" So it really just does sneak up on you.
In the unnecessary sequel category, we've got Mechanic Resurrection. Arthur Bishop thought he had put his murderous past behind him when his most formidable foe kidnaps the love of his life. Now he's forced to travel the globe to complete three impossible assassinations and doing what he does best, making them look like accidents.
What?
Da-da-da-da. Directed by Dennis Gansel, this one stars the legendary Jason Statham, Tommy Lee Jones, Michelle Yeoh, as well as the delectable, the always beautiful Jessica Alba.
What?
Yeah. She's in it.
Yep.
What?
She's in it.
Who is she playing?
And last, she's playing the love of his life.
I could see that. Oh my God. I could see it. Easy. It's okay.
And last up, Don't Breathe, which we have already discussed and reviewed.
Mm-hmm.
So, folks, of these three films, Hands of Stone, Mechanic, Resurrection, and Don't Breathe, which one are you most likely to check out? John, let's go with you first, since you haven't seen any of these films.
You know what? I was going to have some cute story about how I need to go see Hands of Stone because it's about somebody else I've met in my life. But pass. It's going to be Don't Breathe.
Okay.
Good. Aaron?
Unless they change it to the Hands of Sharon Stone, not interested. I will probably see Mechanic Resurrection. I don't know why, but I do got a thing for the Alba. And it's Jason Statham 24. Who can say no, you know? But it's Don't Breathe. Come on. Come on now. Don't Breathe. Go see that, people. Go see
don't
it.
Don't Breathe. Don't.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, Mechanic, those are the kind of films that I much more enjoy watching at home when I can make up my own perfect blend of buttered popcorn, get my drink, you know, my orange drink,
mm-hmm.
or some great, maybe some purple, kick back and watch a good action flick. So that's probably when I would watch it. But I'd go back into a theater and see Don't Breathe.
Can I ask you guys a question about the Statham? Is this a step backwards for him from where he has been over the last year?
I think it is. He's done some really interesting stuff this last year. Well, he's done two things, right? He did
Furious 7.
Well, he did Spy.
And Spy, yep.
And Fast 7, right?
Mm-hmm.
Both of those, Spy, he was fantastic. If he would stick with that vein of action comedy, I think it'd be nice to see versus John Wick with a bald guy and Jessica Alba.
Don't even tarnish the name of John Wick by associating it with Statham's usual drivel. John Wick was almost a piece of action art.
It was. It was very, very balletic. Yeah, it was very good. So do you think that? Do you think it's a step back too, Justin?
I don't know if I'd say it's a step back because I've never really... I mean, I like Jason Statham. Don't get me wrong. I think when it comes to an action film, he does a great job. I mean, all you have to do is think of that first scene that he did in that... Oh, gosh, which movie was it? Where he put the bike pedals on his feet so that he could... Yeah, in the Transporter. And just kicked ass all over these guys in this oil slick by using these grippy bicycle pedals.
Mm-hmm.
He's fantastic, but he's not a thespian. He's not someone who's only going to pick the best films possible for him. He is very much the Samuel L. Jackson British actor guys. He will take pretty much any role that comes along because he's just, he needs to work. He needs to produce. He needs to make money. He needs to keep his name out there. I certainly don't belittle him for that. That's just, hey, when you're an actor, you can either become the lauded actor who only does Shakespeare and the occasional, Anne of Green Gables or Pride and Prejudice kind of movie. Or you're the guy who just takes every role because, damn it, you know, you've got to buy dinner too. Mm-hmm. So I've never expected a lot of greatness out of him. When I get it, that's great. But when I don't, you know, I'm not all that disappointed. I wish he would go back and do some more Guy Ritchie films.
Yeah,
I think he's at his best when he does Guy Ritchie movies.
Okay. I was just curious what you guys thought, if we were on the same page. What's going on Blu-ray and video on demand, John? If you can dazzle us, you know, I might put Scott out of a job. I'm just saying.
All right. Coming out on Blu-ray and on demand, we have first up is The Jungle Book on the website. Amanda Sink gave it an 8.5. Aaron and Brian reviewed it in episode 227. Aaron gave it an 8. Brian gave it a 6.5. And we have Me Before You. Amanda Sink again gave it a 9. And I think during the episode 232, Justin wondered whether or not this movie made her straight.
Nice.
And Aaron gave it an 8 on that episode.
Oh, so good. So good.
And then on VOD, we have Bloodfather. Mel Gibson stars in the movie. An ex-con reunites with his strange, wayward 16-year-old daughter to protect her from a drug dealer's trying to kill her. We also have Intervention. It stars Colby Smulders, Natasha Lyonne, and Jason Ritter. A weekend getaway for four couples takes a sharp turn when one of the couples discovers the entire trip was orchestrated to host intervention on their marriage. Followed up by Ace the Case, Manhattan's Mystery, starring... she's probably more of a supporting actress. I didn't know anybody else, though. Susan Sarandon is a supporting actress in this. I didn't know anybody else. She leaves Olivia home with her 17-year-old brother, Miles, in charge. On the first night, Olivia falls asleep on the couch, wakes up not realizing how late it is. She goes out to walk her dog and her dog, Charlie, without Miles knowing, and witnesses a young woman being kidnapped in empty New York streets. And that's what we got.
All right. Now we're going to go to our Ho trivia game or feature. Justin, what are we going to do this week? It's something new.
Well, this week we're going to do Significant Anniversary. This is where we pick a film with a significant anniversary, being 20, 30, 25, 30, etc., that came out this month to discuss or reflect on its impact. And John, this is the first time we're doing this, so we're going to let you pick.
When I was thinking about this, there was only one movie that came to mind as far as an August release, and that was the gem that gave us Transformers the movie.
Mm.
Beautiful cartoon, 1986, I believe it was. Yes. It had to be, of course, because it's 30 years from now. that movie meant so much to me growing up. I loved the cartoon, but that movie really taught me you can love something that scares you. The spoiler alert, Optimus Prime dies during the movie.
What? Oh, son of a bitch. Does Michael Bay bring him back?
Yeah, he sure does.
He sure does. He brings him up as a gray Transformer for a little while in the TV series. But I really loved the movie. It meant a lot. It was the last really good thing that I saw before we moved to the States. And I still have a memory of my friends and I all in the rec room of one of their houses watching this movie, and just watching the movie, and instead of playing with our Legos or anything else, we were just completely swallowed up by this. And then when Optimus Prime does die, like, there wasn't a dry eye in that place, because how did that even happen? How do you kill him? But yeah,
Megatron, that's what happened.
Oof.
Yeah.
Justin, what are your thoughts? You're a big fan of Transformers. Are you, is that nostalgic for you?
Oh, cartoon? God, yes. I mean, I remember seeing this in theaters. I was living on Fort Meade Military Base. It's over in Maryland. It's where the NSA is located at. And they had a two-screen little theater. And gosh, I saw, I don't know how many movies there. But I originally wasn't sure if I was going to see this movie. And then my brother and his friend saw it, came home, and talked it up to the point where I was just slobbering all over myself to go see this movie, especially because Spike in the movie uses a cuss word. He says, damn it, open, damn it, open. And I was like, what? A cartoon with a curse word? Even though damn it's really not much of a curse. So I went and saw it. And yeah, I mean, when Optimus Prime dies, it is a gutting. I mean, just a gutting moment. Because this is a character you've watched for years. And I mean, there is no better good guy than Optimus Prime. Nobody more noble. Nobody, you know, with as much courage and conviction and strength as Optimus. And he dies. And he doesn't only just die, he dies near the beginning of the movie. You got a whole lot of movie left and this character's dead. What are they going to do? But I love this movie. I loved it so much that I've already pre-ordered the Blu-ray disc version that comes with all sorts of stuff and a beautiful case. It's a movie that it was so strange at the time, especially with the Junkions. And, you know, Dare to be Stupid and all that other stuff. It had such great music, too. I mean, oh my God, of course, yeah. Everybody remembers The Touch. You've got The Touch. You know, everybody remembers that. But there were so many other really great songs in that soundtrack. It was probably one of the most rocking soundtracks that I had ever heard, especially at that time. It's a very special movie. It means a lot to me. And, I'm really glad John picked it because it's worthy of being talked about.
You remember watching the G.I. Joe movie after watching this movie and how much of a shame that was?
Oh, God, it was just terrible. I mean, nobody died. Everybody parachutes just in the nick of time.
Everyone's nothing, a stormtrooper.
Yep, nothing really happens. It's, yeah. After this movie, it was like G.I. Who?
Right.
G.I. Lame.
That's... That joke was pretty lame, too, by the way.
It's a Polish knee slapper.
That's a Polish knee slapper. I've never heard. I'm writing that down. Polish knee slapper.
It's when you start slapping your elbow.
Oh, it's funny.
You're welcome. My job here is done. I'm out.
Thank you.
Peace.
Good job.
Drop the mic.
Good pick, man. That's the first time we've done this, and I like the idea of it. I think it's a cool idea. And I think actually that was also David McGraw's idea. He suggested that. And I like the idea of incorporating that because I didn't realize how much we feed off each other's memories and of certain movies. And those historical ones are pretty cool. And I never even would have thought of Transformers because honestly, it didn't hit me as hard, or I didn't remember it as much until you guys brought it up. Like, it's just one where it just faded out of my history, so to speak, because it's not one I rewatch, but thinking about it, I really loved it when it first came out. I totally didn't really think about it much until you mentioned it, but that's very good. Very cool.
I'm also a massive nerd, so I had that going for me, too.
That helps. Yep, that helps. Definitely helps. All right. Well, we're reaching near the end of the show. Is there any recent film or TV recommendations not previously discussed? Anybody wants to mention? John? Justin? Either one?
I've been watching The Night Of on HBO, and it's been pretty – it's a pretty – deep dive into some scary thoughts about criminal justice, but The Night Of follows a story of a young Pakistani kid who is being charged for murder. It's a really deep story. It's actually a remake of a British show that's been pretty filling up some of my time.
Is it based on a true story?
No, it's not.
Isn't that serial thing.
Yeah, it's not based off of a non-Syed by any means. Okay. But yeah, it's pretty great though. I do strongly suggest it.
Okay, Justin, you had something too.
Well, I don't know if I've mentioned it before. I probably have, and if I did, I apologize. But I recently finished watching season 2 of Star Wars Rebels on. I downloaded it off of iTunes, but it's on the Disney Channel. Folks, you know, I recognize that a lot of people aren't going to watch it because it is a cartoon, CGI cartoon, but still a cartoon, and because it's on Disney Channel and it's not, you know, on an adult channel, so to speak. But it is a really, really good show. And if you're at all interested in the era of Star Wars that leads up to episode 4, you know, in which Rogue One is going to be taking place in, you really kind of owe it to yourself to watch it because it's considered canon. So the things that occur in this show will carry over into the films and into other stories. In fact, there's one character in the show, Ezra, who is this young Jedi character that apparently Benicio del Toro is in talks of playing in a movie.
Hmm.
So, and I think episode 8, as a matter of fact. But it's a very high quality show. The writing is sharp. The voice acting, even though Freddie Prinze Jr. does do the lead role, the lead voice character, he doesn't grate on me as much as I thought he would. In fact, I kind of forgot it was Freddie Prinze Jr. doing it. It's really high quality. The storyline is great. I mean, Vader shows up in several episodes. In fact, he showed up at the end of the two-parter that closed out the season two finale. Just, I want people to don't be afraid to give it a try.
Okay.
If you're a real Star Wars fan, I don't mean if you're a real Star Wars fan.
No, don't do that. If you're one of the real fans, then you'll like it.
If you're a deep cut Star Wars fan, you owe it to yourself to watch it.
Do you have a tattoo in the back of your neck? Then you're not a real fan.
No, I don't mean to say if you're a real fan, but if you're one of those fans who wants to know everything about Star Wars, then you should be watching it. It's good stuff.
Okay, I want to mention a movie that I saw when I was a little kid, didn't remember any of it. But so I rewatched it recently, actually for a remake episode. And man, it's not great. It's called Logan's Run. Has everybody here seen Logan's Run?
Uh-huh, long time ago.
So long ago, I barely remember it.
Well, it's one of those movies where if you watch it now, I just turned 40 years old. And if you watch it now, it's dated. The effects aren't great. Yada, yada, yada. But some of the ideas in this movie, and it basically is a society that's living under a dome, and they are allowed to be, it's basically a pleasure palace where you can go and enjoy all of life's festivities, but you have to be willing to die at age of 30. It's basically, it's population control, et cetera, et cetera. And then you've got one man who it becomes his mission to find out the secret society that is basically taking in runners who are people that try to escape this death and gives them some kind of sanctuary. So, and then it follows him and he ends up becoming a runner and it follows that journey. Even though it's old, it's very dated and it came out the year before Star Wars. So it gets overshadowed a lot because Star Wars effects wise, it just blows this movie off the map. Because you can still watch Star Wars, and even without George Lucas's additions, it still looks great. This movie's very dated. But the ideas, the story ideas at play, I never realized how many movies and stories and things this has influenced over history. I mean, Total Recall is almost a dream. There are so many movies that are influenced by this one movie that I realized watching that movie that it just made me think that if you're a film historian or a film buff or somebody who just appreciates a good science fiction tale, I think you should go and check out Logan's Run. It just really blew me away how interesting and intriguing the movie was.
Kind of made me think of that. And I'm not comparing them, mm-hmm. but that Justin Timberlake movie In Time, where yeah. they all have a certain amount of time in which they can live and they use time mm-hmm. as
yeah.
Money, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of what that made me think of at first, because it looked like all the people died young or they stole other people's lifespans.
It's really interesting. And
aren't they? I thought they were redoing Logan's Run.
They've been talking about it on and off for years. Mm-hmm. On and off for years. Any recent outrage in entertainment news or events you guys want to talk about? Anybody?
You know me, I don't get outraged.
Yeah.
I am calm and cool.
Yeah, that's you. When I think of calm and cool, I think of you. What about you, John? Anything?
I actually don't get outraged, and I like to determine the difference between actual outrage and internet outrage. So,
okay.
There is a difference.
I've got one. I do want to bring it up. And if you're avoiding every Spider-Man rumor, Steve, skip ahead 5 minutes. So there's a rumor, last chance, that the actress Zendaya, is that her name? Zendaya?
Yeah,
okay.
Zendaya.
We'll be playing Mary Jane Watson in the new Marvel Spider-Man movie. I don't really think that's a big rumor. I think everybody kind of expects it at this point. But of course, because of that, there are a lot of people that have opinions all over the place about it not being a white girl, she not having red hair, all those sorts of things. And I kind of wanted to know what your opinions are in this respect. Does it bother you that they're... If this is the case, let's just assume it's the case, that they are going for a more diverse cast. Is there anything about it that you do see as a problem? How do you see it? And don't worry, nobody's going to judge you except everyone that listens.
Well, I'm outraged. I mean, where are white actresses supposed to get roles? There just aren't enough white people roles out there to be handing them off willy-nilly to these minorities.
Minorities. Wow. Wow, that just happened. So no problem at all is what I'm getting from Justin. And his.
I got no problem with this at all.
All right. What about you, John?
How old is Zendaya? Is it, I can't even say it right now. Zendaya?
I don't know. 19, 20, something like that. She's young.
Okay. All right,
she looks
fair.
She's about 16.
Yeah.
Well, I that's why I had to ask. Has anyone seen her with the red hair yet?
No, I haven't seen her. No, I haven't seen her.
Okay. All right. I'm fine.
Would you be
it.
Okay if she didn't even go red haired?
No, I would not.
No, she has to be red haired at the very least. But I've seen the pictures of her with red hair and I'm fine with it. She can do whatever she wants. She can play the role. I'm sure she's going to be great. I actually like I actually really like the diverse cast. I like the kid they chose for Flash Thompson. I like what they did with her because it makes sense for New York. It makes sense to have a diverse cast at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So
my thing with, and I'm like this with anything, if it's a comic and it's written a certain way, if there is something that's very distinct about the character or it's a character trait, that shouldn't be changed. Whether, and I know some people are like, well, it's political correctness, da da da. I agree. If it's being changed for those reasons, I don't agree with that either. If it's something that doesn't affect their character, that doesn't bother me. Now, Mary Jane Watson, the first thing people think of, she's a redhead. Now, I know some people are like, well, you don't have to be that way. Well, it doesn't have to be, but it is that way. That is the first thing everybody thinks of. As long as they dye her hair, I'm fine with it. Because they don't automatically think that honky with red hair. They just think the red hair. Kirsten Dunst didn't have, she was a blonde and they dyed her hair. I'm fine with just dyeing the hair. That's fine. Now, if they change the character, then I would have a problem. And I don't think they're going to. I think the character is going to be the same, just played by a different actress. I'm fine with that. I'm very much a purist, especially when it comes to Spider-Man. I'm still against a gay Spider-Man because it's not who Peter Parker is. But if this, as long as they dye her hair red, I'm good. I don't care. It doesn't seem like a deal. But of course, there's a vocal minority that are making it a deal. And
vocal minority.
Yeah. I see. I didn't even mean to do it. Oh, I get it. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Jeez. All right. Well, please review us on iTunes. You can join our Facebook group. And I'm supposed to reiterate, it's a group. There's a page. There is a Hollywood Outsider Facebook page where we put up a bunch of new stuff. And there's also a group where you can interact with the community. It's also where our topic goes every week, etc. So look at the group. The group is different than the page. I was talking to Ty Nelson, and he was letting me know that I apparently did not expressly explain that those are two different things. Stay through the credits for outtakes. Find other episodes, reviews, and other info at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Our email is feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Be sure to email us. Let us know what you thought about John. How did he do? Does he deserve a stake in the heart, or does he get a pass? You know, where are you at with Mr. Davenport? And remember to grab the hoe on the go with our Apple or Android apps, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or subscribe in your podcast app of choice. Thanks for being here. John, thanks for doing this, man. Thanks for being a support.
Hey, I love doing this with you guys. This has been a lot of fun. I think I finally hit my stride in the last quarter or last third of the show, but I really love this.
Did you? Are you sure?
Well, I'm going to say I did because I had the confidence to believe in that.
I will say I've been the guest Justin and I both have, where we've been on other podcasts. It does take a little bit to find your footing. So if you think you found it in that last quarter, that's cool. That's cute.
You keep thinking that, man.
It's adorable of me. I know.
I guarantee you, Scott Clark is listening to this episode like you've never heard a man listen to an episode. He is probably replaying certain parts like, yeah, that joke bombed. Yeah,
I would have said this joke and it would have been so much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he totally missed a window there. That's what he's doing right now. And now that we're saying that about him, he's actually physically punching his radio right now.
He's punching some baby in the face. Oh, wait, no, that's Justin. My bad.
That's me.
Yeah, that's totally Justin. What do you think?
Is that you?
That was me.
That's right. I need a good color version of that to use as an avatar.
Punchy the baby in the face?
Yeah, he drew a picture of me one time in like profile where I don't know if I'm holding it or
you're
what.
Holding a baby in the face, punching him, and it's just like you get this angry look on your face. I did that while I was at work because that's where I do some of my best doodling is at work. I have to go find that doodle now.
Yeah, I need a good quality version of that because it was hysterical.
He needs a good
quality. Because that's exactly how I look when I am punching babies in the face.
God. John, where can people find your works?
I am most active on Instagram, which you can find me at rjohn.draws. That's first initial R, middle name John.draws. You can find me also on Facebook, facebook.com/rjohnart. You'll see a lot of great things where I draw boobs on stuff. And
you're great.
I do a lot
you're
of great...
a very talented artist.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate
you do,
it.
You do good boobs.
I'm turning into a boob man in late stages, but yeah.
Welcome.
And on Twitter, I'm rjohn.draw. So those are a whole lot of different confusing ones to go with.
I didn't think you could use a dot on Twitter. You could use a dot? Yeah. Oh.
Hold on one second. Let me.
Maybe you don't even know your own Twitter address, huh?
No, I don't. I barely use my Twitter so much. It's actually everything is usually Instagram and Facebook. So let's just stick with those two.
Okay. That sounds good. And Justin, your new book, Fragile. Yeah. Is in stores now.
It is out there and available for purchase in print and ebook. Hopefully we'll have an audiobook version of it in the somewhat nearest future. So that makes 5 books, but it's the second novel in my horror series that I'm doing, Gallows Investigations. And in fact, today, against all my better judgment, I even started working on a third one, even though I've still got Titan's Rise to finish and A Killing Magic to finish. So I can't help it. I'm always out there.
Yep. Get it
inspiration's
done.
Awesome. I love it. I love people. I love hearing about people's inspiration, how excited they are about doing their thing. That's awesome. I'm so happy for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh my God.
Thank you.
Get off your
And
knees.
Now I want our listeners to play a little game called F Mary Kill with the three of us. I want the results.
Okay. All right, guys. Well,
I'm betting I get killed a lot.
All right. Well, you can email that feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Who do you want to F, Mary, kill?
No, put it in the comments for the post.
There you go. Go into the Facebook group. And when we put the post up, be sure to throw it in there. I'm curious where I end up. All right. Remember, the next time you head into a theater, guys, buy some popcorn at ridiculous prices.
You've got the touch. You've got the power.
This is so disturbing.
That's how you should end the episode, playing a little clip of that song.
Oh, should I?
You know, hey, I'm just telling you how to make your job more complicated, man.
How about we just play you idiots singing it? I think that's even better.
There you go.
Well, thanks for coming on.
All right,
John.
Guys, I have got to go to the bathroom. I meant to do it before jumping on, but I was late, so I didn't. I gotta. John, it was really a pleasure having you on. And if you're available more often, you know, and one of us can't make it, I think you're one of the perfect go-to guys for it. You did a great job.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. I really love doing this. This was great. This is very a special moment for me. Thank you so much.
Aww.
It wasn't special for us, but
yeah, it didn't mean anything to Justin. He's like,
I
gotta
go about you guys, man. Like, you know.
Sorry about that, guys. Jeez. I really apologize.
I've had to hold him this entire time.
Yeah. Hold me back. John, Justin.
I thought he meant more in a loving embrace.
No, more like bent over a table, and I'd call it rape, but whatever. John, you guys have, you met in the Battle Royale thing, right? So you guys have talked
before. We met in the Battle Royale. We are actually Facebook buddies.
Mm. So that's like real friends.
That's wow. that's as close to real friends as I like to get.
Well, you guys are probably kinsmen then.
You mean kismet?
What did I say?
Kinsmet?
You said Kingsman. Some amalgamation of a crazy word.
Kingsman. That's what I was going with. Kingsman. I do want to ask, you want to go by John or R. John? Because you go by R. John Art, and I don't know if you're a rapper or what, but...
The R is silent, but the R, yeah, I leave the R there because for the people who know me professionally, as far as like in my professional life, they know me as Robert, so I leave the R there to try to lessen some confusion for them.
Hmm, wow. Why don't you do that, Justin? Why don't you call yourself Austin?
Can we call you Robbie?
No.
No.
Did you hear the lack of hesitation in that?
No, did you hear the venom that spilled out of that?
No.
Is it Rajan? What is it? No, it's dude. John.
Oh no, man, Rajan, that's badass.
They'll be throwing, I mean, it won't, you're married, I get it, but I mean if you were single, Rajan, that gets panties at your head.
My name's Rajan, the big dick is silent. Thank you.